The Viridian Nutrition range of 200-plus award-winning products includes vitamins, minerals, herbs, nutritional oils, specialty supplements, tinctures, and balms, all formulated to be healthful, efficacious, and pure. By choosing our Viridian Nutrition range, you are one step closer to your goal of 100% wellness. Ethical vitamins with an organic heart. Available at all Browns outlets. Browns and you.
So before we get started, just something about one of our program partners, Shireburn Software. Your challenges, their solutions. 40 years working with HR and payroll teams, their Indigo suite is trusted by more than 7,500 companies in Malta. With over 149,000 employee licenses, generating above 300 million euros of net salary payments every month. The Indigo Suite is a comprehensive solution for HR, payroll, and attendance management.
So today's topic, imposter syndrome. I think this is going to be a really far-reaching episode because so many people are suffering in silence with this and it isn't often discussed openly. And we have three delightful guests with us today who know about this topic firsthand in their own various ways. Our first guest is Fran Moyser, founder and headhunter at FM Search and Sivenorum. As a headhunter with over a decade experience, she has advised and dealt with professionals from all walks of life and, unsurprisingly, with professionals who struggle with imposter syndrome. She is passionate about creating long-lasting value that focuses on professional growth and change rather than just money, which is why she is also looking to launch Malta's networking community platform for NEDs and board advisors, close to my heart, aside from her headhunting business. Our next guest is Shelley Caruana. Whilst she is known for her Instagram page, Shelley's Indoor Jungle, she's also a psychology graduate and is an HR assistant manager. She is currently enjoying her last few weeks of maternity leave after the birth of her first baby. So you really have your hands full, quite literally right now, Shelley.
Very much.
Our final guest is a psychotherapist, lifestyle strategist, and founder of the self-development agency, A Life I Choose. She works with her clients to alleviate the patterns of limiting beliefs that block them from fulfilling their potential so that they can create lives that are authentic, fulfilling, and enjoyable. She does this with her work through her Create Your Kick-Ass Career course and her latest venture, Experiments in Connection, which are dinner parties where no small talk is allowed, which honestly just sounds like heaven to me. She is passionate about people living their truth and creating lives that light them up. Welcome, Emma Hogg.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me here.
I am delighted to have you, ladies. But let's give some context around this first. And we have some juicy stats from the 2020 KPMG Women's Leadership Summit report. 75%, that's a big number, of executive women report having personally experienced imposter syndrome at certain points in their career. Nearly half, 47% of executive women say that their feelings of self-doubt result from never expecting to reach the level of success they have achieved. 56% have been afraid that they won't live up to expectations or that people around them will not believe they are as capable as expected. And 54% of executive women agreed that the more successful they become, the lonelier it gets at the top because they enter new peer groups. And I think Fran will like this stat. The WEF survey found that women are less likely to apply for jobs they want, even if they match the criteria. Wow. And especially when the job is in a perceived stereotypical male area, such as analytical or management roles. Harvard researchers ran a dummy ad on a freelance job platform asking for management expertise and experience in analytical thinking. Just 6% of qualified women applied for the highest expert role offered, compared with 22% of qualified men. But when the advert was more precise and stated test scores required for the role, the share of women who applied went up to 29%. I think that's amazing. Mm. So to overcome imposter syndrome, 72% of executive women looked to the advice of a mentor or trusted advisor. When asked which dynamics within the workplace were most valuable to help reduce feelings of imposter syndrome, 47% said having a supportive performance manager, and 29% said feeling valued and being rewarded fairly. So we'll get into how to deal with it first. But first of all, Emma, let me come to you. Let's define, what is imposter syndrome? How does somebody know if they have it, if they are suffering from it?
Sure. Okay, so let's start with the word imposter, right? It's, I don't belong here. So it all stems from feelings of not enoughness. I'm not good enough to be here. I don't have what it takes. I'm not capable enough. It's a fear that we all come into this world with. I mean, I haven't met every single human being on the planet, but the ones I've met all have this fear. You know, and it's about managing, you know, creating self-awareness around it and so on and so forth. But yeah, not enoughness.
Not enoughness. That's brilliant. How would you define it, Shelley?
From my personal experience, I've definitely had a lot of imposter syndrome, probably, I would say, well into my 20s, when I started working, really. You just kind of feel like a bit of a fraud. You just kind of feel like you're where you are due to luck rather than due to your capabilities.
Yeah.
And it's a feeling that sucks. It makes you then want to go overboard, work harder. It makes you overthink because people then, you think that people are going to see through you, and actually you're not as good as they think you are. Mm. That's how I would describe it.
And you, that's how we connected, wasn't it? Because on social media, you did a post talking about kind of that you're not just the face of your Instagram. There's so many more aspects to you that people don't necessarily know about. And I just found it so raw and vulnerable. And you talked about kind of anxiety and lots of different things in there. So I'm just so glad you're here with us today. Thank you.
If I could just say, I was speaking to my friend about coming here, and I was telling him, I was like, I'm so nervous and I feel like, I don't know, why should I go there? Like, do I know what I'm saying? And he's like, are you literally having imposter syndrome about having imposter syndrome?
I love that.
100%.
You're living the example.
And Fran, you must deal with a lot of very successful, proven, you know, can outstanding women, but I'm sure this is something you see too in your day-to-day life.
Yes, it does happen in varying degrees, but it's something that it is present, and it's something that probably like everyone here at this table, I've experienced directly myself. How I would define it, like Emma and Shelley said, that it would be feeling that it's never enough, kind of what you've done or what you're doing or the direction you're heading.
Or even sometimes who you are. Feel,
yes, or, yeah, or who so, you are or, yeah, or what you're doing. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And something that Shelley said, like that maybe drives you to like prove yourself a bit more. And
work harder, you know, stay longer at work, for example, get more degrees or more qualifications and courses. And sometimes, at least in my case, you know, being overly available and overly pleasing to other people just to feel appreciated.
Sure. I totally get that. I feel like with imposter syndrome, then there are other ingredients like people pleasing, low self-confidence, and they all just are a recipe for disaster when you're like that.
Mm. Well, we've just done an episode on burnout, actually, and that is the most, that's a just beautiful recipe for like that is where you're heading if you're gonna extend yourself and overextend yourself.
If you don't leave with what works for you and how you naturally are, then obviously wearing that mask is going to become heavy over time.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Because wearing a mask is never authentic. If you're never authentic, you're never living with your truth, in your truth. And it's interesting the way you were speaking about, you know, how the not enoughness causes us to want to go out and do more and achieve more and so on and so forth. And then sometimes it also results in a block like procrastination and I can't move forward and I don't put myself out there, you know, and I don't say, hey, like, I think I would be really good for this.
Like you're paralyzed. Like,
exactly. The paralysis of analysis. We overthink it, but the energy goes downwards. It doesn't come outwards. And whenever the energy goes downwards, it gets stuck within the body and creates a lot of anxiety.
Yeah.
And this feeling of a lack of fulfillment.
And then can you get into a vicious cycle, circle almost, like a spiral of you're not taking any action, so then you worry about yourself even more.
And you
more,
worry, and because you worry.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Exactly. And I then, felt...
And then there would be other things, like kind of you see other people moving forward and you'll experience jealousy and you don't like... And you're not looking at the jealousy going, okay, wait, what's this telling me about myself and what I want? What can I do about this? Instead, you're going, I'm not capable, but F them, basically, you know? And you want to go and kind of like... It becomes messy.
Yeah.
So it's always really... I love that you're having this you're bringing up this discussion because it's so important to look at our feelings of not enoughness because we all come into this world with them.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, and they can really limit us if we don't have awareness of it.
The topic came up especially for me because I run the Property Sisters community in the UK and it's something I see in that chat and that dynamic and that affecting people every day and holding them back from, again, I'm a judge for awards and I'm trying to encourage people to apply for these awards and they won't put themselves forward even though I know what 10 of them could win that award and we hold ourselves back and you must see that, Fran, especially in when you're trying to place people and you see people that you know are great and would be great in a role or an organization but won't put themselves forward for that.
Yes, that can happen, particularly with women, as I've mentioned. I found it to be more common in women, and the research indicates exactly that as well. And there are some absolutely fantastic and brilliant women out there. And I deal a lot at senior and C-suite level, and you would see that even the most confident and accomplished women, the more we talk, there would come sometimes layers, you know, Fran, what do you think of this? And sometimes I tell them, listen, nonsense, forget about it, leave it to one side, you know, just don't pay attention to it. You have to move forward with what you have and what you bring to the table. I recall a particular interesting professional, very qualified, very well capable, and she struggled to express her achievements, and it took us about 20 minutes to get to her achievements. And I was like, I will ask you, why did it take us about 20 minutes to get to such amazing stuff that you have achieved?
Yeah.
She was like, well, I didn't want to come across like I'm bragging, you know. And I said, but you should. Obviously, it's important to put it in the appropriate context and decorum, and there's a very fine line between confidence and arrogance, but most people don't cross that line. Very few do cross that, and those will never ask themselves, do I have imposter syndrome?
Yes.
You know, this question will never cross their mind.
Exactly.
What am I bragging? They'll be like, you know, I'm not bragging, I'm just, you know, expressing facts. So when you ask yourself that, rest assured you're not bragging, okay? If you ask yourself that question, it's not bragging. We worked a lot on bringing that to light in her, and she became more confident as time went by. What I would like to say is one of the areas that you've mentioned there when it comes to job applications, which is very true, I would encourage if you are in business and you're hiring to really look at the language of the advertising that you're using. There is a very useful website called Gender Decoder that you can use. It is free and you pass the copy and paste the text or AirDrop, I found.
It's called,
yeah, AirDrop. Skills and paste, you know, like my daughter asked me, were you alive in 1920s? No. it tells you whether the language that you're using in your advertising for jobs is either gender neutral or more masculine or more feminine.
Ooh.
And it's interesting you've mentioned that because when words like analytical were used, less women applied, because usually analytical management tend to be more male-associated fields, even though when it comes to the analytical field, we have some fantastic women. I saw a TikTok the other day, right before Women's Day, where they looked at the achievements and inventions of women, like the Wi-Fi, the GPS system. I never knew.
No, I didn't.
Those are analytical, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
ah.
Wow. So why do we associate that? But if we're associating that, then we need to learn how to use different language that includes women and does not exclude by design, yeah, or when we're being subconscious. And another thing is women apply for roles that they are genuinely qualified for, and that's a good thing, that's not a bad thing,
yeah,
to be competent in what you do. It's important, but it's also important, again, when we advertise for jobs for women, is that we include the essentials. Like you said, if when test scores were required, more women applied, so include essentials in your requirements for jobs. Don't, you know, there's no need for you to put there, you know, being able to backflip whilst drinking margaritas, right? You need a degree.
Keep it relevant.
Keep it relevant to the job, and stay away from words that mean nothing, like leadership skills. What does that mean?
Yeah.
Leadership skills.
You need clarity.
I can herd cats. That's significantly useful, right? And I'm very proud of it. will it be of use in your company? Probably not. So what, you know, experience in managing team of X for this amount of time. Yeah. Make it, you know, more specific.
It's like at school, isn't it? Well, I don't know. I was at school a long time ago, but when they say answer the question, like when you're writing an essay, answer the question rather than just telling, you know, this is everything I know on this subject.
Mm. Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Answer the question, keep it specific. And Emma, is that something you see with your clients too?
I do. I mean, yesterday I was working with a client who, you know, has a dream of how she'd like her life to be, but she keeps taking action for something that doesn't quite fit. And then she notices this doesn't really fit. It's not really what I want. So my work with her as her coach and her therapist is to challenge her to, you know, well, what makes you think the dream is too far? What makes you think you are not capable? Have other people achieved this? What are the fears and the doubts, you know, and then we bring them to the surface. Okay, what's the worst case scenario? What could happen? You know, and it's amazing because fear is within us all. I mean, you've achieved amazing things. And, you know, when we spoke on the phone, I told you, like, I'm sure you can relate whenever you try something new, like we experience fear. And you told me, oh, yes, and this
absolutely
is your new thing.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Whenever you want to do something you haven't done before, the brain's going to create fear because that's uncharted territory. The brain doesn't know it yet. So that's risky. Anything that the brain knows, there's a certain element of predictability to it. So it feels safer.
Okay.
Even though it's not necessarily safer because, you know, anything could happen at any time. But predictability feels safer. We have the illusion of safety. But stepping beyond the comfort zone, doing something new, is going to bring fear up because fear is there to protect us. It protects us from humiliation. It protects us from social isolation. It protects us from pain, illness, death.
So it can feel like it's holding us back from things, but actually the purpose of it is to protect us.
Yes, 100%. So during sessions, what I'll do a lot of the time is, okay, let's bring up the fear. Let's just bring it to the table. Let's go like really far into how bad could this get. And sometimes it goes into death. You know, like I can tell you, like I had an opportunity to travel and network recently with people I used to dream about networking with. It was incredible. And the fears that came up for me were ridiculous, like fears of literally dying. And okay, that's also linked to having a child and being away. So then that gets even more complicated. But fear is there to protect. But the thing is that fear can really keep you tethered.
Yeah.
It can make you catastrophize.
Totally. You know? Wow. And it's good to have a certain element of tethering, like of feeling connected. I think that's important. But to have it keep you small so that then you can't fulfill your potential and then you don't feel excited about your life and you have no level of like spontaneity, then you lose the zest for life. Life becomes routine, mundane, boring, unfulfilling. Mm-hmm. But when you're living life a bit on the edge, doing the things that scare you,
and succeeding.
That's super exciting. It's thrilling. So this is the beauty. Like, this is what I get to see with my clients, that then this zest for life comes out and they start, and it's like a muscle, eh? Like, kind of the more you practice, the easier it becomes. And then you give yourself new challenges and those things start to scare you.
And then you get the positive spiral going up. You try something new, it increases your confidence and you have, you know, like, it worked last time, let's try it again.
Let's try something new.
But getting the elephant in the room out on the table so you can look at it, no matter how scary that is, that's a really good first step.
Yes, it's vital. And then also understanding the limiting beliefs. Like, for example, when I started The Life I Choose, I didn't make any money for the first year and a half. I was just like, and it wasn't because I wasn't capable, but I then went to a Tony Robbins event, Unleash the Power Within, and we, you know, he makes you sort of get in touch with your limiting beliefs. And I brought out this limiting belief: I am not capable of creating a successful business.
Ooh.
And then I also came out with another limiting belief: I'm not lovable, I'm not likable. And then another one was, if I shine, other women won't like me.
Wow.
And I had to acknowledge them. And I love this. Tony Robbins gets you to acknowledge them as BS, basically. This is BS. Like, and my new empowering belief is, and you switch it. So I switched, I am not likable to I am totally lovable. I am not capable of running a successful business. I am completely capable of running a successful business. And anything I need to learn, I will go out and learn it.
Yes.
You know, and, you know, the one of if I shine, other women won't like me. Sometimes that's true. Sometimes it's true. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, I will always like me. And often when I shine, it encourages other women to shine too. And that I really, really like. You know, so it's bringing out the fear, identifying the limiting beliefs, choosing empowering ones, and then embodying the empowering beliefs. So it's not just about like, hey, I have an affirmation and I leave it there. You have to practice it, and embody it, like get it into your body, because then that switches the way your brain works. You know, there's that part of the brain, the reticular activating system, the RAS, and that filters information based on what you believe.
Yeah.
So if I believe I'm not capable, I'm filtering out all of the opportunities. But if I believe I am capable, all of a sudden I start to notice the books I can read, the courses I can do, the network I have, the people I can connect to, so on and so forth. And then when you take action, it just strengthens that self-belief even more. Even if you don't get the result you were hoping for, but you learn something from it.
And you've started on that trajectory anyway, and being open and being comfortable in the discomfort, you don't know kind of where that's going to take you.
Exactly. And if you don't get to where you want to go, you keep the goal and you readjust your strategy.
Yeah.
Or maybe you rethink the goal as well, but whatever, it's about flexibility.
Yeah.
And trusting the self.
Yeah. And Shelley, has motherhood, has that brought its own particular flavor of imposter syndrome?
Motherhood was pivotal for me to actually battle imposter syndrome.
Ooh, tell me more.
Sure. So first of all, I very much a person who would read online. I will read articles. I will do my research. I will ask professionals. When you have a baby, the amount of unsolicited bad advice, I'm sure...
it's true.
is insane. So I've been on an improvement incline for the past few years with my imposter syndrome. It used to cripple me to the extent that I used to feel like, I don't know, like I would go into a meeting or whatever and I would just be a shell of a person because I would be so scared that people are going to see through me. And as Emma says, it tethers you and you feel like you're not yourself 100%.
Yeah.
That you have so much more to give, but you're scared that it's all wrong, kind of. But with having Daniel, I learned to, first of all, become more assertive. I know these facts, and I'm not going to just submit and accept what people are telling me anymore, because it's not just about me now. there's a little baby dependent on me.
Yeah.
And if I say that he's overheating in summer and he doesn't need socks, he doesn't need socks. You know, like, so for me, I think it was incredible how it made me actually more, wait, what's the word?
I think you're saying that you trusted yourself more. You chose to trust yourself yes, and to honor your opinion.
Exactly. And yeah. And
trust your gut.
I've become more assertive. I'm trusting my gut, the motherly instinct, and that I don't pass on the bad traits. So Daniel, we know children are sponges. I do not want him to have low self-confidence. I do not want him to be a pushover and have people walk all over him. So now more than ever, I feel like I really need to work on this.
And do you find that so the lessons that you're getting from motherhood, those points where you need to be more assertive and say, hang on, like, this is my decision and I'm sticking by that. Has that translated into kind of other aspects of your life?
It has. I feel like even the thing is with imposter syndrome, I noticed that even though it is mostly linked to the workplace, it had started to affect me in my personal life.
Right.
So just the same way that I wouldn't really contribute to conversations at work, I was finding it hard to contribute to discussions or arguments I was having with family and friends.
I can relate.
If I knew, like, even if I researched something and someone is a bit more coercive than me, I would just say, okay, well, what do I know? I wouldn't argue back.
Back down, like,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, I would totally back down immediately.
Yes.
So,
I can relate to what you're saying. I had read Russell Brand's book about addiction.
Yeah.
And found it so interesting. And I started thinking about the way that I use different, like alcohol, for example. And I noticed that, like, I would go into a party and my first thought would be, where's the bar? And I never used to get sloshed. That wasn't my thing. But I liked to have like that one or two glasses, you know, it would like sort of take the pressure off.
Take the edge off, yeah.
So then I gave myself a challenge, like 40 days without alcohol. And I still had to do the social events. And my God, like the anxiety that came up was incredible. And this was before I went to the UPW with Tony Robbins. And so I realized this was really an area I needed to work on. Like, this was a while ago, but like kind of trusting myself and my voice and what I have to say and what I think, and that it's okay.
It was crazy how I don't know how it clicked, but I realized I wasn't even being myself with my peers. It was crazy.
Yeah.
And like I would constantly look for validation as well. So that's another thing. Instead of
like approval.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Instead of finding internal validation, you're constantly asking for feedback, validation. Like, is it good? Okay.
That's like in your example, Fran, where you're saying it took the lady you mentioned, it took her a while to get to
Yes. And I think hearing Emma's and Shelley's experiences as well, it's something that we can all relate to a certain degree, some of us more, others less, depending also on the environment that we grew up in. But what I've also noticed, particularly from my daughter is 9 now, is that, and I did not notice this until I had my daughter, is that the way that we treat our children, girls, I mean, that later become women, is very different to how we treat men. So, for example, the language that we use, we tend to use very infantile language with girls.
Right.
Like, you know, that's such a pretty dress. You look so cute. And
focusing a lot on the physical looks.
On the physical looks, and on the behavior as well. So, for example, I mean, I've always been weird throughout my life. I think there's no secret with that.
not a bad thing, Fran.
I'm not saying it is.
Quirky all the way.
You were saying, you know, how do you get imposter syndrome? But with my daughter, for example, or again, I see like girls in the park and everything is, you know, a lot of accent on the look, on the behavior. That's not ladylike, for example.
Yeah.
Even the toys and the colors that we use, it's all very softy, very pleasing, aesthetically pleasing to the eye, to the ones that look at you, to the ones that are around you. Whereas if you have boys, for example, they're about exploring, right? Look at the colors that are used in Legos.
Yeah.
They're very, you know, boy-like, not what we subconsciously associate with women, because, you know, it's pink and it's light blues and, you know, Legos are red and dark blue and very vibrant yellows. So, and we tend to see that. So if we want to start with that and do better, we also have to look at how we educate our girls and how they go about it. Like, for example, my husband is incredible. He's very well-intended, but sometimes when Susie goes at the party, he was like, oh, don't climb there. I said, don't you climb. Go for it, you know? Yep. You know?
And do you think it starts like that young?
Yes, I do. I do believe that. I don't know if it is the same in all of the societies. You know, I'm not a sociologist. That's how it's called? Anthropologist, yes.
Both.
Exactly. I don't study that. But if you look, it starts with our own community. So I would like to encourage you, look around your community and see, does that happen? With maybe if you don't have any children, maybe with other children that you see, when you go at a park, when you see, you know, what do you observe? Because change doesn't start at a global level. Yes. It starts with you. It starts with your immediate family, with your immediate friends as well. Yeah. You know, so for example, when my friends were having daughters, everyone was taking them like, you know, I don't even know how you call them, the stuff for the hair and what have you.
Right.
And I never used them for Susie. First of all, like I have two left hands. I don't know how to do hair and stuff. But also it's something that I found then I felt very strongly against, because everything was very, as I said, very, aesthetic, very soft, very soft, and I'm not soft. I'm the opposite of soft.
Yeah.
And that's when I realized why it was so difficult also for me growing up, because I always felt I don't fit in, not because I'm not capable, but because I was never soft. I was always direct, but I was never described as direct. I was described as rude, moody.
Yeah.
Bitchy,
bossy.
Mm. Yes. And it never clicked until much, much, much later.
In fact, I do think upbringing does make a difference. I have three younger brothers, and growing up, I always felt like I was not one of the boys, but there was no discrepancy between myself and my brothers. My mom raised us all the same.
Right.
If I'm doing chores, my brothers are doing chores, but we're all mostly focused on academics. You know, that was our life. It was only until later on in life that I suddenly realized, it's true. I do get treated differently because I'm a woman. And I remember specifically, so I never had imposter syndrome until I started working, because I remember specifically at one instance where I had suggested something to someone in upper management. This was in a part-time job I was doing when I was at university. And she told me, you're still just a little girl. It was something like that.
Oh. Ouch.
And I that is when
offensive,
doubt
isn't it,
starts.
You know?
I still feel like sometimes, like, am I a little girl still? Like I'm trying to raise a little baby. And, you know, it's stuck. It really stuck. And I feel like that was like the first seed that
got planted doubt in me
and my capabilities, rather than telling me this is the reason why we can't do this, this and that.
Like as giving you specific feedback rather than crushing criticism.
Yes. The language that we use is so important. These things like girl, you know, and soft and ladylike.
Sometimes the simplest things are the ones that will affect you the most. Like for me, it was like a core memory.
Ouch.
But you said about like ouch, and I'm like, ouch. That's
Did you slap him?
This is another thing. Sadly, it was a woman. And sometimes I wonder, like you see a lot of women in higher up positions that are so tough.
Hard.
And so hard, because I think it was hard for them to get there.
And they pass that along. I think that's so true. If I may share, I experienced that in banking, and I had comments, not from the guys, but about the women, like about what I was wearing and the shoes I was wearing, and don't do this and don't do that. And it's you know, I'm a professional. Give me some kind of credit. But those comments, my perception was that was unnecessary, and that was just a cheap swipe. So I think we can be harsh with each other, can't we?
And there was you spoke about, you know, how you dress and everything. It was until recent in the UK that I can't remember exactly where, but probably within the financial services industry, that, you know, part of your dress code for women was wearing heels.
Yes.
For example, you know which one I'm referring to. No, it was a couple of years back that they were actually, you know, sued and, you know, got rid of heels because, you know, if you don't want to wear heels, I mean, if you want to wear them, great. But if you don't want to wear them, just you don't need to. But the fact that they were part of the dress code.
Yeah. Do we need to get comfortable being uncomfortable? Because part of what I'm hearing in the themes of the imposter syndrome is that it's very extrinsically focused, isn't it? It's we need approval from outside, or we need that reassurance from other people. How do we focus on kind of like building that ourselves?
That's a beautiful question. And yes, ultimately it is about like developing that self-trust. So it's about having those honest relationships with yourself, because it's not like, oh, I love myself. Like, that doesn't just happen like overnight. Like, I decide it's trendy to love yourself. I'm going to love myself, you know, like, no, it's about developing that relationship with yourself over time, like you would with any other human being that you're genuinely invested in and interested in. So it's about having conversations with yourself and being more compassionate with yourself and listening to yourself, you know, like making space for all of the different emotions, for when you feel good, for when you feel when you feel excited, when you feel anxious, when you feel angry, and just like giving yourself that space to acknowledge it, process it, and see what you need to do about it, how you can action that. Because our emotions are like a compass. You know, they're literally pointing you in the direction you need to go. So if I feel excited about something, it means go for it, reach out. If I'm feeling angry, it means say stop. Say don't treat me this way, don't speak to me this way. If you're feeling anxious, you need some kind of support.
Yeah.
So let's look at the fear and let's see, because sometimes fear has a point. So sometimes you need to, you know, take into account, okay, my fear is telling me I need to protect myself from this, this and that. How can I do that?
Yeah.
And if the worst case scenario does happen, how could I repair from that situation? So it's really about just developing that practice of having a deep, knowing relationship with yourself. And it doesn't mean I like everything I do. Part of having that kind of a relationship with yourself is going, I really don't like what I did. I don't like the way I reacted. I don't like the way I behaved. I don't like the way I'm being in this situation. But because I have this trusting relationship with myself, I can own that. And then I can say, okay, how can I tackle this differently? So it's about developing that self-trust. And when you have that self-trust, and I keep going down with my hands because ultimately it's down here. Yeah. If I'm looking, in fact, you did this before. It's like I'm looking for external validation. Mm. It's like I need to make a decision. I'm going to ask 4 different people, you know. I don't think there's anything wrong with asking people for opinions. Before we came on, I told Shelley, what do you think? Hairband or no hairband? And she was like, I like the hairband.
Like, I really like it. It really makes your eyes look nice.
That's exactly what she said.
But like, your eyes.
Like the truth is, I knew that already. But like kind of, I liked asking. Uh-huh. I wanted to see, like, what do you think? You know, and it's a good way of connecting. Like, it's a nice way to chat.
Yeah.
So there's nothing wrong with asking people opinions. And you learn a lot as well when you ask other people opinions. But the question is, can you make the decision yourself and be okay with if you mess up? Like, can you be okay with that?
Can you own that? Can you have that responsibility? Because sometimes it's something you said, Shelley, when we get stuck in our own heads, we can catastrophize.
Yep.
And things get bigger and scarier. And absolutely, fear can have that protective purpose.
Yeah.
But once you go off on that catastrophizing merry-go-round.
Just constantly expecting the worst.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's why before we started the podcast, I went, woo! Like, kind of like, you know, it's like, it's about shaking the energy up because fear makes us kind of like, and obviously fear isn't necessarily stiff. So you have to like move your body. Like, the easiest way to create a shift in your mindset is to create a shift through your physical movement. So, you know, for anyone listening, if you're ever feeling like nervous or you're stuck in the paralysis of analysis, you know, you're overthinking, get up, shift your state, move. Like I do this, I click my fingers a lot, you know, like, and just move your body, open your chest, breathe deeper, because that's going to shift the way you're thinking.
That's a great tip. That's a really good tip. Shelley, what type of things do you do to challenge that type of thinking?
I have a lot of hobbies.
I have
a lot of hobbies. So like if I'm spiraling, first of all, I have my husband. He really grounds me. So like I feel like when I'm spiraling, I need him to just stop me and like talk some sense into me. I still feel I do want to eventually, and I am definitely learning to stop, ground myself. But sometimes I do need that external.
For sure. Who doesn't?
And it really helps immediately. Like when you have someone else's perspective, an outside person's perspective, it really helps.
Yeah.
But I like to keep busy. So like if I'm feeling anxious or anything like that, I have my plants, I have my, I don't know, my coloring or, you know.
Yeah.
I just like to keep busy. And like that, I kind of don't leave space for the negative thoughts, I suppose.
Yeah, you won't entertain them, because sometimes that's the difficulty, isn't it? It's you start going down that line, as you said, Fran, when you've spoken to people, like, just put that aside. Yeah. Your mind's taking you there, and sometimes
go
you
down
just
the rabbit hole. Yes. You know, it's like,
sometimes it's so loud that to shift, like, to a, it's very hard. So sometimes
sometimes like I know, like I would know that I'm being irrational. I would know it, and still I wouldn't be able to overcome it. It's so annoying. It's so annoying. But it does get better in time. There was a period in my life, and I've spoken about this with Trudy. I was in such a dark place. I would just be like, it was again in my early 20s. I don't know what happened to me. I would be like in such a state of anxiety, like on the sofa crying, and that I had to go to a doctor to see like what I can do to get out of this. Like my mom, like my parents were worried about me because I was just like, again, a shell of who I really am.
Yeah.
And it does get better. I think that is something that is very important to hear.
But it didn't just get better. It got better because you chose to work on it.
Yeah, you need
to
work.
It's not just a matter of time.
They always say step one is accepting that you have a problem. I think step two is not making that problem who you are.
Yes.
Accepting that you are able to improve on it.
Your identity is separate from
this. Exactly. Your identity is separate. It's not who you are. Because if it's who you are, you can't change it.
Yeah.
So
something you're going through. I think that's a great example for the listeners and viewers of what we talked about with that spiral, and that's where you get to. But as you said, once you take those steps, the right steps, then you can reverse that and you can get yourself on going upwards, that upwards
for
trajectory again.
Sure.
And what are more of those steps, Emma, that to get you going, to build that momentum, to get you back on track?
I think it depends on what you want to achieve, like kind of like how is the imposter syndrome impacting you? Because it might be impacting you in terms of like believing you're worthy of love, you know, or it might be impacting you in terms of, oh, I'll never have the kind of career that I want, or I'll never earn the kind of money that I want. So first, it's about identifying how it's impacting you specifically.
Because it can be all areas of life, as you said, not just business or work or career.
Totally. It could be impacting your health as well, you know. So identifying, okay, what are the challenges at the moment? And how do you want your life to be like? And how do you want to feel? And then understanding the why behind it. This is really important, because that's like the juice behind it. That's when you really get in touch with the person's soul, right? It's like, okay, why would this kind of career light up your life? And then they'll start giving you reasons, you know, oh, it's like, you know, my grandmother had really instilled these values in me, and, you know, I'd be living in alignment with what she taught me. And, you know, I always wanted to have an impact, and, you know, I watched, you know, my parents doing this, this and that. And, you know, the dream starts to gain, fuel.
Yes.
And then you brainstorm, you create action steps, you know, like, okay, how could we bring that vision into reality? So it's very much about refocusing the energy, you know, because where focus goes, energy flows. So if I'm focusing on how I'm not enough, I just build more and more and more of that. And I go smaller and smaller, and life becomes more and more frustrating. And it doesn't feel good to be in that space. And that's the energy that then we put out there as well. So that impacts everything. It impacts the way people relate to you.
And like you say, like, that's actually how the brain works. If you study neuroscience, which you obviously have, that reticular activating system searches for those examples. So be very clear what you are focusing on.
Exactly. So you need to refocus your energy. And that's why, like, things like affirmations are helpful, because you're refocusing, or like symbols as well. Like, if you have a piece of jewelry that you say, okay, like, with this symbol, you know, I remember that I am capable of anything. I remember that I love myself no matter what, you know. You just put it in that symbol, and then you bring your focus to it. You redirect, you know. Where focus goes, energy flows. So you take it away from the fear and you put it towards the vision.
And that's exactly what you described, Fran, when with the women that you work with, when they go on that self-doubt narrative, then you're like, put that aside. How do you help them? How do you get them to focus on that?
Even for myself, when I do spiral, it's important to get out of your head, number one. Mm-hmm. Self-confidence is a very long journey.
Yeah.
And if you're going to wait until you're self-confident to take action, you're going to wait for a very long time. Probably forever.
Never happen.
Probably forever.
Yeah.
So it's important that you separate your thoughts from your actions as well. Not everything that you think it's real, or not everything that you think can happen. I think about a lot of random things.
Yes. And
I extrapolate, and, you know, I imagine stuff, and, you know, it's normal. That's where creativity comes from. That's where fear lies, as you said, Emma, you know, when you protect yourself, or like you said, you know, when your hobby is your creativity, your enjoyment comes from. And it's important to separate this. And also, you know, we don't really need to think so much about everything. There's a very big danger, in my opinion, in this all of this self-awareness and trends. It's good that we talk about it, and it's good that we get to know ourselves better, but are we overdoing it at the expense of action and enjoying? Do we really need a reason for everything?
And get
I don't
stuck
know
in
if
over,
we do.
Over analysis.
Do
paralysis,
I need a reason to
said.
Have a sip of this? No. Yeah. I'm just going to have it. So it's important that we start also doing things that bring us joy and are natural, and to get out of our heads. So, for example, when with Sivanorem, that business, for example, I had it for years in my mind, and I was really scared to launch, because I thought, well, that's a stupid idea, because if it was so good, everyone else would have done it. And I spent years just thinking exactly that. And then I kept talking about it and thinking about it and stuff, and, you know, my husband said to you, can you just do it so you stop pestering me with it?
I love that.
And
push.
Exactly. And I've done it because I knew if I don't start doing it, I will never do it. And I will always think about it. But I spent so much time thinking about it that it stopped me from taking action. So here, I would really caution against thinking things through a lot.
Mm-hmm. Too much. Yeah.
Too much. You need to also find a balance and take action. And also, we're afraid that we're going to fail. Okay, if we fail, who's going to be responsible?
Yeah.
I will be responsible. But if I win, who's going to be responsible? I will be responsible, right?
Yeah.
So when we think about our win, in the same way that we're responsible in our minds for our failures, like, I shouldn't have said that, or I shouldn't have done that. In the same way, we're responsible for, I said that, I've done that, I have achieved that.
And we don't give ourselves enough credit for that.
We don't, because we tend to think more on the negative side, especially if you're someone who's cautious by nature, or has been through a lot of damage, that for them every step is danger. That I can relate to, and I understand. But the worst that can happen, like Emma was saying, and Shelley was saying, you know, what is it? And then we move on. And it's important to see, as I said, sometimes thoughts are just passing thoughts. You know, like when you're going into a shop and you touch, or at least I touch things, right? This dress, and I'm not going to buy all of them, am I? In the same way that thoughts in my head are not all of them matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You need to learn to
One of the best pieces of advice I ever heard was from Dr. Joe Dispenza, and he said, don't believe all your thoughts in your head.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially the ones at 4 a.m. in the morning.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
And I'm I'm like, are you in my head? I'm like, that's 4 o'clock every morning.
For me, it's three.
A lot, like, everything, 3 a.m. You know? If I say this, what will people think? If I dress like this, what will people think? I mean, in all honesty, I don't really care, and that's good.
Yeah. Have you always been like that, though?
Yes. Right. But it affects me in different ways, imposter syndrome. So not necessarily by what people think or believe. And I think here is something very important. You said earlier that, you know, once you move at the top, it gets very lonely. It's lonely at the top, whether you're a woman or a man. And that's the reality of life. Definitely. It's important that you can stand on your own two feet. So I live by certain mottos. I have loads, one of them being, you know, stand up even if you're standing alone. And this is something you really need to get comfortable with as well. Mm-hmm. If you're alone, so what? I mean, do you really need a crowd for everything that you do?
Yeah. And it is, that's addressing that fear that's really stuck with me, Emma. Like, what's the elephant in the room? What is the biggest fear? Take it out, look at it, dissect it. And even if it is as bad as death, like, at least it's there and you're looking at it. And by the very fact you're shining a spotlight on it, which is the whole point of this series, then it dissipates that angst, that anxiety around, or it can begin to. It's a step on that journey too.
Totally. Sometimes you need to bring it up and then bring it up again and then bring it up again. And you deal with some parts of it and then new things will come up and then you deal with that again. You know, it's it's a process.
Yeah, but it gets you out of that stuckness.
Yeah.
Can I just circle back to when we were mentioning how sometimes we get stuck inside our own thoughts? And that was something I used to do a lot. Like, when I realized that I was having this imposter syndrome and I was not really part of the conversation, I was not letting myself be that. At a point in time, I was like, okay, rather than focusing on myself and what I need to do, I should just, like, look around the room, like when I'm in a meeting or anything, like, and observe other people. That's how I learn. And the moment I did that, I felt like that's when imposter syndrome starts to dissipate, because you figure out that everyone is figuring it out.
Yes. Everyone is human.
Exactly. Everyone is human. Top management make bad decisions and they go back. And when you see that, when you see, like, the vulnerable side, rather than focusing on yourself, you're seeing everyone's, like, little weaknesses or unsure, like them being unsure. That's when you start feeling less like an imposter, because so many people talk so much bull crap, and a lot of people know how to sell themselves. Uh-huh. And a lot of people fake it till they make it.
Yeah.
That's so true. That's why they say, you know, never meet your idols, because you're going to be disappointed, because we tend to put them on a pedestal.
Yeah.
And then when we see the human face, they're no longer godlike in our vision and our mind. You know, it doesn't mean they're not good. They're still just as good as they were when you admired them. But because we tend to run things through a different filter, you know.
They're still human.
And sometimes we look at others through the perspective of what we think should be or how we would like to be. And a very basic example, my daughter is like me, she's very blonde. And she goes to me, she's really Winter Wednesday. She was like, I really wish I had black hair. And I started laughing. I said, okay, so blonde women want to have black hair. Black-haired women want to have blonde hair. Straight-haired women want to have curly hair. And curly-haired women want to have straight hair, because we don't want to do... She was like, oh, really? I said, I don't know, but probably a lot of them do. So, you know, shall we do Blonde Wednesday?
Nice.
That, you know, we don't need a wig and what have you. You know, we just make Wednesday, but blonde, you know?
Yeah. Blonde Wednesday. Oh, let's make that a thing.
So, very simplistic example, but what you said as well is, like, when we look at others, we look through these lenses and, you know, just...
Yes.
Relax, man. Honestly, we don't need to be so uptight.
It's so interesting
everything.
What you said about the idol. Like, we build people up. Like,
should meet your idol, just so you know that you are as worthy as them.
Yeah.
So that's a good point. But also, you know, you remember the the story about Michael Jordan, the way he was built up almost like he was godlike, and then he made a mistake and they tore him down and did this, the same thing with David Beckham.
Yes, it's exactly. Cancel culture, you know, right?
It's, yeah. What is it?
What's cancel that? Culture. No,
cancel
when you,
culture,
you
yeah.
do
culture.
Something oh, and okay. then... I think okay. that's what, I'm not entirely sure, but I think okay, that's okay. what you're referring
well,
to.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. Eh? It's that kind of like, whoa, 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 whoa. And then, oh no, what does it say about me if you're up there and I'm down here and I can't see the humanness in you? I have to bring you down. Like, it's mm-hmm. it's interesting.
And this whole discussion is making me think that those people probably have imposter syndrome too.
100%, yes, for sure.
I have friends who are both males and females who have imposter
yes.
syndrome.
Yes, definitely.
So no matter what they, so it's not tied to the success, the perceived success, or the bank balance, or the fame, no. or the followers on Instagram. No. It's still something that, that
sometimes
affects.
The more the followers or the more the money, the more the fear, right? Because yeah, if I yes. lose this, will you still love me?
Yes, exactly. Or what will you still everyone
like me?
Think?
Will you still you respect know? Me? You know, it's so interesting, like the things that you see come out in sessions. So for sure.
And there's an interesting dynamic that we're going into where we are looking for that external validation when we're in imposter syndrome. But exactly what you said, Shelley, is that when you do begin to look at those people, do you really want their opinion? Mm. Like, do you, you know, you begin to see that they're human and that they have their flaws, they have their foibles. It might be in a different area to you, but they are human too. They're yep. not. They're not perfect. They're still all working it out. I saw a beautiful meme the other day that was like that. No one knows what they're doing. Everybody's just working it out. And honestly, I'm like, oh,
exactly.
oh
thank God.
Because exactly. I was the only and one. And that is, I think that is when you embody that motto, you just realize that, you know, as we're saying, we're all figuring it out. No one is perfect. Obviously, there are people who are experts in their area, but yes. no one is a master of everything.
I think it's good to go and learn from people who have achieved the results exactly. that you want to achieve because, you know, yes, exactly. but then, you know, if you're learning from somebody who's amazing with finances, you want to learn about their finances, maybe they're not great at relationships, so don't go and ask them for
exactly.
advice there,
exactly.
you know, and that kind
it's
of thing.
It's a learning journey that we all have, and I think it's also very important that each of us, as I said at the beginning, also does their part, so the way that we react when mistakes happen, particularly in the context of the show that we're talking about women and imposter syndrome in women, is to also be aware of the language that we use, you know, you mentioned girl and things like that, and to also be aware of how we judge them, you know, because if we look at a women executive, for example, at C-suite, if they make a bad decision or not such a great call, which happens a lot of the times, whether you're a man or a woman,
yeah.
how are we reacting to that? Mm-hmm. Are we harsher on women? A lot of the times we are.
Yeah.
Than we would be on a man. If a man loses their temper in a meeting, right, we say, oh, he's having a hard time. If a woman loses her temper in a meeting, she's like, she's unstable.
Yep.
So we have to be very, also very careful of the language that we use and the behavior that we judge and the words we use to judge that, because that is a fact that we do use different language when we describe women and male behavior, particularly in the context of business as
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's blown my tiny mind. Wow.
But it's true now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Think about it.
Yeah. So Fran, if women are listening to this and they are wanting to take that next step, there's a job that they want to do, a role, they haven't completely owned that they can fully do it, what would be your advice to them in that position?
Go for it. Just go for it. And it's not about fake it till you make it. I hate that saying, and I think it's very detrimental. It's about being open to progress and experience in the areas that you still need to grow into. But you have the foundation, you have the basis. No one is the finished article. No one, not yeah. even the executive that you're interviewing with.
Yes.
They are not the finished article, because if everyone was the finished article, they wouldn't be hiring now, would they? Everything would run perfectly. So just go for it, and also be your biggest cheerleader. Don't wait for others to tell you you're smart, you're capable, because you know that you're smart and you're capable. And if you're struggling to figure that out, I'd like you to just take a notebook and write down all the problems you've solved in your job and all the achievements you had, and write them down and read them back whenever you need to see how far you've become, how far you've gone, sorry, and how far you can still go. Because the problems that you solved and the achievements you had weren't there until you've actually done them.
I love that.
I think that's a great advice to anybody facing any step, whether it's work, business, like actually, can you imagine? You'd start that, and I can imagine
visualize
it. Yeah.
And at the end of a 10 years, when you look back, you'll see you'll have loads of notebooks, loads of them.
That's what I was thinking. If you are feeling that imposter syndrome, it might be difficult to get going at first. Oh, well, what have I? Oh, well, there was that time. But once that momentum's building, the reticular activating system is switched on, then I bet you could write pages and imagine how that would change your view of yourself and your future and what's possible for you.
Yes.
Oh, that's powerful. Shelley, you've been there. You've done it. Imposter syndrome had its grip on you, and you spiraled down, but equally you turned that. You got yourself out of it, and you know, you're thriving and going from strength to strength. What advice have you got for listeners and viewers?
Don't be afraid to fail. Don't be afraid to fail. It's usually not as bad as you think it's going to be. I mean, imposter syndrome has been around for a very long time. There are a lot of mottos that tell you, you know, like, if you fall, pick yourself back up, you know, failure is a sign that you're trying. So it's been around for a very long time. And as cheesy as they sound, it's very true. Don't be afraid to fail, because from there you're going to learn. And from there you're going to keep trying. There's a choice. When you fail, you're either going to go into your shell and just become a bystander in the world, or else you're going to say, okay, I need to try something different. And then you grow from it. So,
Love that. And Emma, you've given some really good advice already about taking those first steps, building on it, the mindset shift. I think it sounds like everybody should go on a Tony Robbins course from the sound of it. But what else would you like to leave the listeners and the viewers with?
I would say work on developing a really positive relationship with yourself first. Like, you know, treat yourself like you would your child, you know, kind of. I mean, you'd love your child. You'd want the best for your child. You know, you would invest in your child, like do the same for you. And then once that relationship is good, the rest follows.
Yeah. Focusing back on yourself rather than that external.
Yeah.
Cool. That's beautiful advice, ladies. I think the viewers, the listeners are going to get so much value from this. And if this has affected you, if you think it can help somebody that you know, that you love, then please do share or tag somebody below here, because this can make a real difference. And that's what this show is about. So thank you, ladies. And let's cheer to that wonderful advice.
Yes.
It was great.
Cheers.
For us.
Yes,